Hello and welcome to P4A's Let's Talk Rare, a monthly podcast from Partners for Access.
Bringing you the most important news, trends and discoveries in the world of orphan drugs and cell and gene therapy.
Join me, Georgie Rack.
And me, Owen Bryant.
To analyse these developments and what they mean to you. Welcome to the show. Today, I will be speaking to the Chief Medical Officer at Reneo Pharmaceuticals, Alejandra Dollenbaum. Alex joined Reneo Pharma in 2018 after a distinguished career at Stanford University School of Medicine, where he specialised in evaluation and care of patients with allergic and immunological diseases. Welcome to the show, Alejandra. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. I'm a pediatrician. I started with an academic career, and in the setting of the academic career, I began to do clinical research, that is clinical studies to evaluate new therapies for patients. And this was at the time when, as you know, we had the big HIV epidemic, and we were just starting to introduce treatments for children to treat the disease. And at that time, pediatricians were not very knowledgeable about how to do clinical trials in children because, as you know, in the past, it was very difficult to do studies in children. So we learned a lot from that experience, and I decided to transition out of academia and move into industry to help develop drugs to treat patients with rare, difficult-to-treat diseases. And that has been the hallmark of my career, trying to develop therapies to help patients who would otherwise not have access to therapy, because often, you know, big pharma is not interested in developing drugs for rare diseases. So I was very interested in that.
It's such a small patient population, isn't it, when you're looking at rare diseases? So that's probably why a lot of manufacturers are kind of put off going into that space. But thank God some manufacturers are, because there's such an unmet need out there for these rare disease patients that are desperately waiting for these new innovative treatments to come to fold. So in the introduction, I mentioned that you started at Reneo Pharmaceuticals in 2018. So just coming on 5 years now, what drew you to Reneo Pharmaceuticals?
Well, Reneo is a kind of company where we've done something I think very innovative. Oftentimes, big pharma develops drugs, and for whatever reason, they decide not to move forward. And typically, you know, we look at these drugs that big pharma initially developed for a large disease population, and for some reason that is not related to the medicine, more economics or other reasons, they decided to stop development. We look at the mechanism of action of that drug. And if that drug can be adapted, that mechanism of action to treat a rare disease, then you can take the advantage that that drug has already been manufactured, that research has already happened, that we've learned a lot about how that drug works. And then if you can adapt it to a rare disease, then you can accelerate the process of drug development in the rare disease. And that's what drew me to Reneo, that Reneo had acquired a drug that already had prior research and understanding, and that could, because of its mechanism of action, be adapted very well to treat patients with primary mitochondrial myopathy, which is a rare disease. And that made it very exciting for me.
So how did the company get involved in this space of PPM, which is primary mitochondrial disease?
Again, I think that the idea is, and I'm part of the founders of this company. When we founded this company, we were looking for, we knew that we had this asset, the mevodelpar, and we knew what it could do. And the big question was, if it's not going to treat the disease that Big Pharma planned to treat, which other patients could we treat? And when we looked at the mechanism of action of the drug, we looked very carefully and we ranked what possible diseases could we potentially try to address with this medicine. And the highest ranking disease was primary mitochondrial myopathy because it made most sense. Let me explain why. Mevodelpar, basically, what it does is it stimulates a receptor that sits near the nucleus of the cell. And when it stimulates that receptor, that causes genes to be activated. And when genes activated, the cell starts doing certain activities. And the genes that you activate are actually the genes that improve mitochondrial activity. And what is primarily affected in patients with primary mitochondrial myopathy is the function of the mitochondria. So we knew that if we can activate those genes, we may upregulate the function of these mitochondria, and improve the situation of patients with this disease. There is currently no approved treatment for these patients. There is nothing really that has been shown to work very well for these patients. So what happens is these patients often take supplements to try to improve the energy in their cells, but none of these have been proven to really work well in these patients, and no therapy is approved for these patients. So there is really a very significant need to find new therapies for these patients.
Absolutely. And you explained a little bit about your candidate drug, and a little bit about how it works. And also, I've seen in the news that you recently announced the completion of enrollment for your STRIDE study. Can you tell me a little bit about that and what that means for your asset?
Of course. And this is something we're really, really proud of, because, as you know, we're just coming out of the COVID pandemic. And the COVID pandemic threw a big wrench at research in general. For many, many months, you know, the hospitals were consumed with treating patients with COVID, and they had no resources to treat other patients, or they put aside things that were not urgent in order to be able to address the COVID pandemic. So what happened during the pandemic is that many of the centers that were doing research just lost their resources, lost their staff, lost all their organization to be able to do clinical trials. And everyone was very focused, rightfully so, in trying to address the COVID pandemic. So coming out of the pandemic, it was very difficult to set up clinical trials and to be able to do these clinical trials. And if you add to that, that this is a rare disease and there are very limited number of patients and it's not easy to find the right patients to participate in the trial, well, doing a clinical trial and being able to recruit it in the time that we were able to recruit it, I'm very proud of. I think that this was hard work by many people, not only by us at Reneo. And I have to say, you know, when you develop a medicine for a rare disease, you have to collaborate with many people to be able to do it. You cannot do it on your own. And the first people you need to collaborate is the patients. The patients are really, really important in this process. So there are several organizations of parents and patients with PMM, with mitochondrial diseases. There are organizations both in the US, in Canada, in Europe, in multiple countries. And we work with most of these organizations. We really try to talk to patients, learn about them, what is difficult, what is easier for them to do, what are their needs and what are their problems, and how can we integrate our program into their routine. So that was number one. And number two, we had to collaborate with the investigators, the clinics, ensure that this was something they could do and that all the requirements to complete the trial were requirements that they could meet, that we were not making it too difficult for them to participate in the study. And then, of course, the regulatory agencies that approved the studies so that we could perform these studies in the different countries. So we were able to bring together all these groups and talk to them and come up with plans that enable us to enroll the study. What this means now is the last patient that needed to enter into the study already entered into the study, and that patient will be participating in the study for a total of 6 months, roughly. And at the end of 6 months, what needs to happen is all of the information that we gather from all of the patients has to be already entered into the computers, you know, into what databases in the computers, and everything needs to be clean, and we need to make sure that there are no mistakes in the data. For example, if a patient walked 20 meters and someone made a mistake and entered 200, that could be a big problem, because in the computations, that number will enter wrongly. So we need to double check everything and make sure that every little number that is entered into the study, and there are hundreds of thousands of entries for the study, each one of those needs to be checked, and we need to make sure that we can trust that the information we have is reliable and truthful information. And then you push a button and you do the analysis, and then you get the results of the study. And the results of the study will be very exciting, because at the end of the day, if the results are positive, we will be able to move forward to have discussions with regulatory agencies about a potential approval of this drug for the treatment of these diseases. This is a pivotal trial, meaning this is a trial that will support the approval of the drug by the regulatory agencies so that this drug can be provided to patients in a clinical setting, not in a research setting anymore.
Just listening to you there, it's so difficult. I think, like you mentioned, one of the hardest things for drug manufacturers in the rare disease space is finding your patients and making sure that they hit the right criteria to be able to be enrolled in the clinical trial in the first place. The second is patient retention. Like you say, if they're not adapted well to the patient, if you've not involved that patient voice early on in your development, a lot of patients drop out. They just simply can't manage just living their life along with the clinical trials and all of the stuff that comes with that as well. I think you guys are actually doing a really, really great job of ticking off both of those boxes because you've engaged with patient advocacy groups, like you mentioned, you're speaking to the patients, you're bringing them in, you're actually understanding the patient journey truly through their eyes. And I think a lot of manufacturers can learn something from that. I think it's a great fruition, really, of all your hard work is paying off that you've actually managed to recruit so quickly. So just moving forward, what are your commercial plans? Where are you in your clinical trial stages at the moment?
So this would be considered a late phase development. And again, if this study is successful, this study has a companion study. So patients, not in all of the countries, but in the majority of countries where we are operating in this trial, patients can enter into what is called a long-term open label extension.
Yeah.
So once you participated in the STRIDE study, which is a 6 months, what we call double-blind placebo-controlled trial, what that means, it's a mouthful, but what it means is half of the patients by chance will get medicine, half of the patients by chance will get a dummy medicine, which is called a placebo. And we don't know who receives what, it's by chance. So at the end of those 6 months, the patients that participated in the study can now enter into another study where we are certain they get the medicine immediately, and they will continue to receive that medicine for a total of 2 years. And the whole idea is that in that open label study, what we're looking is at the long-term safety of the product, of Mavodelpar. We want to make sure that if you take Mavodelpar for a long time, that it is safe for you to take that medicine. So what will happen is we won't have all the patients completed 2 full years of open label extension. But if you think about it, we started this study about 2 years ago. Patients participated for 6 months in the first part, and now they have entered into the extension. So now we have many patients who have been treated for more than 2 years. So not all of the patients will have completed the 2 years extension. But when we finish this study, many patients will have at least 2 years of data. And the number of patients we anticipate will be sufficient for us to review the safety of those patients and say, yeah, these many patients took the medicine for 2 years, it was safe. And therefore, how the medicine works in these patients is documented. Then you can have those communications with the regulatory agencies. You know, there are many relationships that you can have with the regulatory agencies. The regulatory agencies try to do their best to help patients who have a difficult disease that for which there is no treatment, and they can expedite the review so that they can approve the drug a little faster. And we have to make the case. We need to prove to the regulatory agencies, we need your attention. We want you to give us those benefits so that we can help patients faster by making the medicine available. I think we will be successful at doing that. I think that we will be able to justify that we need a priority review, an expedited review of the data so that the patients can have access to the medicine earlier. So it will all depend, you know, once the data is available, we will be able to look at it. We will be able to see how good or hopefully not bad it is. And then based on that, we will be able to have a conversation with the regulatory agencies, both in Europe and in North America and in other countries. For example, this study is also open in Australia and New Zealand. But there will be other countries, probably Asian countries, Latin American countries, where we would discuss with the regulatory agencies. There would be a review of the data and a decision would be made whether the drug can be approved for use in these patients. We hope that we can narrow that period to as short as possible, because there is such a pressing need for a therapy for these patients.
Especially, like you say, is that there's no treatment options available for these patients at the moment.
You know, one of the things we're doing now is we're preparing for that as well. At the same time, we're preparing to look at the results of the trial. We need to prepare about how we're going to talk to the regulatory agencies, but we also need to prepare how to make available the drug to patients if the drug gets approved. So That's the process of commercialization of the drug. And the difficult part is we don't know whether we will be successful in our trials, but we still need to prepare for that. So we're doing that. We're working very hard to start working on our commercial plan as well, to make sure that once the drug is approved, it can be available as soon as possible to patients.
So lots and lots and lots going on at Reneo Pharmaceuticals at the moment. Lots to look out for. Sounds really promising. And I'm really, really looking forward to hearing the results of your STRIDE trial in around 6 months' time. We'd love to have you back on, Alejandro, once you get that data, really talk about your commercial plans, see how you're doing and where you're at, if you'd like that.
Be a pleasure to do that.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you very much.
ERA, Let's Talk Rare, is brought to you by Partners for Access. To find out more about Partners for Access and our commitment to sustainable orphan drug and cell and gene therapy access, please visit our website, www.partnersforaccess.com. Make sure you search for Let's Talk Rare in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. Click to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Partners for Access, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next month.